Good morning. I'm Kerry Amos, worship pastor here at First West. We're so happy to have you with us joining in our service today. If you'd like to check out more about what's going on here at First West, please check out our website, firstwest.cc. Again, thank you for being with us.
Hey, in a room this size, you know, it's really hard to find an agreement on an issue, right? We got people all across the board, all different types of life experiences, but there's something that I think we might have a pretty strong majority in this morning. So I'm going to take a poll, and here's the way I'm going to do it. I'm going to say a phrase, and if you're in favor of the phrase, I want you to raise your hand, okay? If you're not in favor of the phrase, you're wrong, but also just sit there, okay? Don't do anything. All right, so I'm going to say a phrase. If you're in favor, raise your hand. Chips and salsa. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Who doesn't love chips and salsa? Don't raise your hand. I don't want you to get made fun of, all right? Everybody loves chips and salsa. I know that I love them, and I'm sorry, but I'm going to be talking about them today, so don't go to a Mexican restaurant, because that's where everyone's going to go today after I talk about chips and salsa. But you know, I am not aware of any restaurant that has ever just made it on chips and salsa. Right? You may say, hey, let's go to this place because they have good chips and salsa, but there's no restaurant out there that says, you know what we do? We sell chips and salsa. We're a chips and salsa restaurant. That doesn't happen, right? It doesn't happen. And even though some of you think they are a meal, in reality, they're not. Okay? Otherwise, restaurants wouldn't give them away for free. It's not a good business model, right? The truth is, as much as I love them, as much as you love chips and salsa, they are an appetizer. They're an appetizer. Let me ask you this. What if all that this world has to offer you, all the joys of friendship and family and all, what if all of those things are simply an appetizer of what's to come? I mean, what if the greatest joys that you've experienced in your life, but the greatest joys, whatever those moments are, the birth of a child, your marriage, a job, a dream that you always had that came to fruition, what if those things were just a small inkling of the things that are to come? In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17, Paul says this. He says, "For this light, momentary affliction is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison." Now, in the context here, he's talking about persecution, about suffering, about what he's walking through. And he says that this light and momentary, it is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory that is beyond all comparison. Now, I want us to break that down for just a moment as we think about, could it be that what we experience in this life is but a mere appetizer? Several words here that I think are important for us. The first one is this, in that verse, is the word preparing. He's preparing. Right? No one gets excited about preparing something, right? In the preparation, you may be excited, but your excitement is not in the preparation. It's in the event that you're preparing for, right? Now, maybe some of you like to cook, you like to bake, and maybe you would say, no, I enjoy doing that, and I'll give you that. But for the most part, we don't get excited about the preparation. Let me prove a point to you. I have not visited with anyone this morning that I said, hey, how's your weekend? And you've said, it's been bad. Well, why has it been bad? Because the Saints lost their preseason game last night. I haven't had that conversation today. None of you in here probably threw your remote control at the TV last night during that game. Maybe Mark Finn did. All right, but why? Because it's a preseason game. It's preparation for what is to come, what really matters. So Paul here is pointing to us in that word of saying these light and momentary afflictions, they're preparing. There's something that's happening now that's getting us ready for something to come. And look at what he says about what's to come. An eternal weight of glory that is beyond all comparison. He says it's eternal. That means it does not end. That means it does not lessen. That means it will be as real and as vibrant a million years from now as it is right now. Paul says that's coming. It's eternal. Notice here, he says the weight of glory. Look at the comparison here in this verse as he's talking about these afflictions. what he's facing in the day-to-day in his experience, what are they? They are light and they are momentary. But this glory that is coming, I love it here, the weight of glory, right? You just sense the fullness of it, the thickness of it, the weight of glory. And then finally the phrase that he uses here, beyond all comparison. This is where we get the word hyperbole, right? Now, do you have that friend that has always had the best ever or the best in the world? That's the phrase I use all the time, right? It amazes me. You go eat with someone, they'd be like, this cheeseburger is the greatest cheeseburger in the world. And I have to tell you, the way my mind works, I don't think that must be a good cheeseburger. My mind thinks this: it is amazing that you have had the ability to eat every cheeseburger the world has ever offered, and you have the capacity to determine through some scale that you've come up in your mind that this is it. Like, it's it. The very best in the world. I'm sorry. But it's where we get the word hyperbole, beyond all measure. And so he's saying here, this day-to-day, the light and momentary afflictions, and they are afflictions. They're not easy, but he says they're preparing. There's something that's coming that is eternal. There's a weight, there's a fullness, there's a thickness to it, and it is beyond all comparison. And so this morning, as we think about this idea here, as I've started to think about this idea of an appetizer and what's to come. You see, understand that the context of what Paul is writing here, again, it's about persecution, it's about affliction. But he says that in that we are being renewed day by day. So where those that he's writing to, those in Corinth, they may be looking at Paul's life and go, you know, Paul, he's not really in his prime anymore. Right? I mean, he's had to suffer all these things. And Paul talks in his writings about the things that he had to go through, the things that he suffered. They're sitting there maybe looking at Paul and saying, well, he's past his prime. Right? I mean, he's had all these beatings and being in jail, all these things. He's used up. He's lacking power now. And Paul says, no. You see, for them, they were focusing on the appetizer. But Paul was fully aware that this was all about the main course. In chapter 4, look down in verse 18, he says, as we look to the things not that are seen, but the things that are unseen. For the things that are seen are transient or temporary, but the things that are unseen are eternal. You see, Paul in this moment, as he's discussing persecutions and what they're suffering, and maybe those in Corinth that are questioning Paul's ability, is he still that first-rate apostle that he was? Paul takes him back to the eternal. We fix our eyes. We set our focus. We put the meditation of our heart is not on what is seen. It's not in the day-to-day. It's in the eternal. It's in the weight of glory that is to come. And so over these next 4 weeks, we're going to talk about living life with our attention on the unseen. What does it mean for your life to set your eyes on what is unseen, to set your eyes on the eternal? How can your life be better? I mean, I think all of us in here today would say we'd like our life to be better, okay? How can your life be more joyful? How can you have a greater impact? Well, there's some people who would love to give you a 7-step process if you do these 7 things. I just want to say this. If you live your life with eternity in mind, you'll accomplish those things. I didn't say easier, right? And so we're going to take some time through this series called Trade-Off, of talking about trading in feasting on chips and salsa to live for eternity, to live our lives with eternity in mind, which is the main course. We're going to take a look in the next 3 weeks. We're going to take a look at some specific areas in our life and discover how making this trading in living with the day-to-day temporary is the motivation for my life and to receive this life of living with eternity in mind. We're going to take a look and see what does that look like for us and why I believe it's a no-brainer. The Bible tells us that each of us in some way can sense that there is a main course that's coming. Right, in Ecclesiastes chapter 3, verse 11, it says that that God has put eternity into man's heart. That God has set eternity in the hearts of men. So even in asking the question, why am I here? To me, for me, just in asking that question, it causes me to think that there's more to this life than just what I see and what I experience. And he says that God has set eternity in our hearts. And so I think a lot of times we like to fill our lives with busyness. We like to fill our lives with stuff because we want to quiet down that voice inside of us that just says there's more. There's more to this than what we experience. But I want you to see from Scripture where I think that's the case. Now, Blaise Pascal, you've probably heard this phrase before, maybe not, but he says this. He says, there's a God-shaped vacuum in the heart of every man, which cannot be filled by any created thing, but only God the Creator made known through Jesus. That's a great quote. It's a classic quote. There's a God-shaped vacuum in every heart that can't be filled by stuff. Chips and salsa don't fill that vacuum. He said it's only through God, through Jesus Christ. And when we think of that quote, when we hear that quote, so often we think of it as a one-time event. And for some of us this morning, we need to experience that one-time event. Because we've walked in here, and as we're going to see this passage in just a moment, we can associate with this passage we're going to look at. Because you said, you know what, I've tried to fill that vacuum with a lot of stuff. I mean, it's kind of been unknowingly the motivation of my life has been to find pleasure and to find joy and to find fulfillment. And you've tried it in all these things. And what Pascal's saying here is, listen, that vacuum, that longing, is a hole that is only filled by the cross. And some of you this morning, through God's grace, he's brought you into this room so that you might hear that message, that it can only be filled by the cross. And this morning, you need to let those things go and gorge yourself on the glory of God through your relationship with him. So he says here that there's that vacuum that exists. And yes, it is a one-time event, but I think that the reality is that for many believers, we continue to be moved and motivated by that vacuum. We've trusted Christ, but the pursuits of our life are still driven by that desire to be filled. We're not finding our satisfaction in him. Go with Ecclesiastes chapter 2. Easiest way to do it is to find Psalms, Proverbs, and then right over from Proverbs, the book of Ecclesiastes. In the book of Ecclesiastes, it's an interesting book, and we see in Ecclesiastes chapter 2, we see kind of a case study here. We see as the author here in Solomon's life, we see a heart that was longing to be filled. And I want you to in a sense, to be able to look over his shoulder, to look into his journal and to see what that looked like for him. What, as Paul would say, what it was like for him to focus on what was seen. Solomon's going to go into this journey and say, I'm going to do all that I can to focus on what is seen and to see what that does for me. Starting in verse 1 of chapter 2, he says, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure, enjoy yourself. But behold, this also was vanity. I said of laughter, it is mad, and of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine, my heart still guiding me with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. So very clearly, he's laying it out here and saying, this is the case study that I'm about to go after. I'm about to do all that I can to find pleasure in this life. And it's important for us to see here the phrase that he uses in verse 3, till I might see what was good for the children of man. He wanted to determine what was best for him to do under heaven. And then starting in verse 4, for time's sake, I'm just going to list these out for you. But several things that he mentions here. As he's longing to be filled, to focus his eyes on what is seen. He mentions here in verse 4, he says, I made great works. He says he built houses. He planted vineyards. He made himself gardens. Now, let's stop there for a second. All right, listen, this might be good for you, but for me, if I'm thinking, I'm trying to find all the pleasure in the world, it's not going to be by growing a lot of tomatoes. But for him, it was. He wanted to chase after that. Gardens, we see here, parks, that he made himself parks. And in these, he planted all kinds of fruit trees. So he built these huge orchards for himself. He says that he built pools, and he said that he had slaves. Here it's this picture of, I'll find pleasure if I can find people to do all the hard work so I can just sit back and enjoy life. Right? He goes on to say, herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. He also gathered silver and gold and treasure. He got singers. And he says that he had many concubines to delight the children of man. See, I think that you would say this morning, he did a pretty good job. I mean, he did a good job. He's doing this case study to say, if I can gorge on all that is seen to find pleasure in my heart, this is a pretty good list. It's a good list. And I want you to see where he comes. Where does he come? Look in verse 9. He says, so I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. And whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure. So if you remember here at the beginning of the chapter, he says, I was wanting to see what was good for the children of man. And now he's saying, you know what? I became great. Like I did it. I ran this case study. I invested my life into the things that were seen and I became great. And there in that verse, the beginning of verse 10, he says, I kept my heart from no pleasure. And I think that's important for us to note this morning, especially for parents in here. I think it's important when you begin to think about your child and who you long for your child to be. I think it would be real easy for us to say, you know, I just desire for my child just to get all the pleasures that his heart desires. But you see, Solomon's at that place. There was nothing. He said, nothing that his eyes desires that he didn't keep from himself. So what was the verdict? I mean, he does this case study. All these pleasures that I wanted, I went after them more than any who was before me. I think, again, just our status, he had it. A big house, he had it. The nice car, he had it. Popularity, he had it. The envy of neighbors, he had it. He had it all. There was nothing that he kept from him. What was the verdict? Look at verse 11. Then I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it, and behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind, and there was nothing to be gained under the sun. He says, I sat down with those chips, and man, I just gorged myself on chips and salsa. All that I wanted, as much as I wanted, I came to a place and realized it's not the main course. It's not the main course. He says it's like chasing the wind. It's like chasing shadows. It didn't fill that vacuum in his heart. It didn't fill it when he was fixing his eyes on what is seen. A while back, I had the opportunity. I was actually in Memphis for a while, and I had some free time. And so I thought, okay, I'm in Memphis. I've got some free time. I feel like I should go to Graceland because it's Graceland and it's in Memphis and I got some time, and so I should go to Graceland. And so I did. I was by myself. I went to Graceland, and you get there to do the tour, and when you do the tour, now they're all fancy and they give you an iPad. You have your own iPad and headphones. And can I just say, it's not possible to look cool when you're doing that, okay? You're not. You just kind of check that, all right? You're walking doing this the whole time, right? And you look like a tourist. You're that guy. But I just want to tell you a little bit about my experience at Graceland. Now, if you've never been to Graceland and it's the dream of your life, then go to Graceland, all right? But I just want to tell you about my experience, all right? So I go there by myself, and I wait in line to buy my ticket. I wait, you know, there was about 100 people in line, and there was two booths that were open, but I'm not bitter. And so I wait in line, and I buy my ticket. Well, when you buy your ticket, they say, all right, great, you've bought your ticket. Now, here's what you're going to need to do. You're going to need to wait here in the lobby, and they will call your number, and then you will get in line. Okay, so now I'm waiting for them to call my number. They finally call my number, and then I get to get in line. Well, what am I getting in line for? I'm getting in line to wait on the bus that's going to take me to Graceland. So I'm waiting in line with these people. We finally get on the bus. We ride over through those gates, those famous gates of Graceland. We go up. They drop us off at the front of the house, and now we're sitting in front of the house. And you know what we do? We wait. We wait to go in the house because there's a group in front of us and we have to wait for them to go in the house. So finally we get up to the steps of the front door, and then there's this sweet young girl, and she gives us this full historical record of what happens in Graceland and how it came to be, and it's awesome. And so the door opens and we go in and we get into the house, and you know what we do in the house? We wait. We wait as people go room to room. And again, it's just a house, and you put all these people in the house. It's not like you can run around and do whatever you want. You go in this house, and you're standing eight rows behind someone, and they're looking at his living room, and it's like, do you really need to stare at that couch for 15 minutes, bro? Like, it's like, hey, Elvis, he sat there. Like, right, yeah, and he probably sat on that seat too. And you're just sitting there, right? And you're looking at your iPad like, come on, I'm just seeing the back of people's heads. So we go through the house, and you're just waiting to go room to room, and you walk in, it's like, oh, he probably hung out in here. And then you wait and go to the next room, and it's like, Hey, hung out in here. And then you get to the trophy room. And you know what you do in the trophy room? You wait. You wait while people go by every trophy and read every inscription. Like, oh my gosh, here's this trophy for this song. I'm like, I've never heard that song. I don't care. But you just, listen, I'm not exaggerating. This is not hyperbole. This is not the greatest ever, right? It was the worst ever. You're just waiting and waiting and waiting. And then we get to his grave. And in his grave, you just wait as people sit there and they read through everything that's on his grave. And then here's the worst part. You know what happens when it's all over? You wait in line for the bus to pick you up to take you to your car. It's like I was incarcerated at Graceland. I could not get out of Graceland. I'm just sitting there waiting to get out. True story. So I get out of Graceland. I finally catch the bus. They take me back. Then I have to wait in line to get my iPad and my headphones back. And as you leave, if you've been to Graceland before, you know this. You walk out right by the line that you buy tickets to go in. And I, listen to me, I am not exaggerating to you. As I walked out, it was all that I could. It's all that I could do to stop myself from turning to the people in line and just go, don't do it! Don't! I'm telling you, that is not an exaggeration. I called Abby as I'm walking to my car and I told her, I just had the worst 2 hours of my life. I wanted to yell at the people buying tickets. And then I felt bad for those that were there that, you know, they didn't speak English. They had come from all over the world. It was like, you've come for this, to wait. You know, in a sense, I think that for Solomon, he goes through this whole journey and he looks back at you and he says, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't spend your life trying to fill the pleasures of your heart on an appetizer. You know, if Abby told me, she said, hey, we've got a free weekend. We can go to Graceland or you can clean out the garage. From now on, I will pick the garage every single time. It's terrible. But here's the truth. Here's the truth. Is it so often in our lives we have experiences where we try to fill ourselves with things and we come up feeling empty, but what we do is instead of leaving and pursuing the main course, we just turn and get right back in line for the appetizer.
Amen.
Paul says, don't fix your eyes on what is seen. Fix your eyes on what is unseen, for what is seen is temporary, and you just wait all the time. Fix your eyes on the eternal. Theologian and pet detective Jim Carrey says this. I'm sorry. I don't know what's wrong with me today. He says this, I think everybody should get rich and famous and do everything they ever dreamed of so they can see that's not the answer. Let that sit with you for a second. I think we would all agree in here today that Jim Carrey's probably doing all right in his wealth status, and we know that he has great fame. He's come to a place of saying, like Solomon, it's like chasing the wind. You see, the issue here in this passage in Ecclesiastes, it's not that he was enjoying these things. Now, caveat, yes, we're going to take a major issue with the slavery issue here and the concubine issue here, for sure, no doubt. But outside of those things, it's not that he was enjoying those things, but that he was seeking his ultimate fulfillment in them. He had fixed his eyes on what is seen. Listen to what Paul tells Timothy in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17. He says, as for the rich in this present age, charge them not to be haughty, nor set their hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. So you see that God has given us this life. He's given us these things to enjoy them. So it's not so much in enjoying them, but the issue is here is whether Paul said in Corinthians about fixing our eyes, or here as he talks about setting your hope, he's saying whether it's fixing your eyes or setting our hope, let's live lives that trade in the here and now. Let's trade in the here and now. Let's leverage the here and now for what is to come, and that's eternity in the presence of God for those that have said yes to Jesus by faith. So Solomon, he had fixed his eyes. As Paul's writing here to Timothy, some people, they had set their hope on their riches. They had set their hope on the chips and salsa. And he's saying, don't do that. Set your eyes on the main course. In 2 Corinthians chapter 4, he's made this argument about persecution and suffering. He's gone and say, fix your eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen. And then he's going to begin chapter 5, and it's a new chapter, but he's continuing the same thought. So don't think we're starting fresh here in chapter 5. He's continuing the same thought. Listen to what he says as he continues this argument, this conversation that's going on here about fixing our eyes on the unseen. Starting in verse 1, he says, for we know that if the tent that is our earthly home is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this tent we groan, longing to put on our heavenly dwelling, if indeed by putting it on we may not be found naked. For while we are still in this tent, we groan, being burdened, not that we would be unclothed, but that we would be further clothed, so that what is mortal may be swallowed up by life. He who has prepared us for this very thing is God, who has given us the Spirit as a guarantee. So we see Paul's continuing this idea of contrast. He's going back and forth here. He's gone with the seen and unseen. Now he's going to go here and talk about a tent and a permanent dwelling, a building of God. He's going to say here, talking about being unclothed and being clothed. He's going to later in the chapter talk about being home or being away from home. But in this contrast, he's showing us, pointing to us here, these two parallel tracks, right? What is seen, what's light and momentary, a tent, a temporary dwelling, but then the unseen, the eternal, the permanent dwelling, the building of God, right? Of being clothed. We see these two tracks that he's kind of running alongside here. And the one that I want to just speak to briefly is that he mentions here in verse 1, is that of the tent. He mentions the tent. Now, at the end of the day, a tent is a temporary dwelling. It doesn't matter how nice you want to make your tent. It doesn't matter if you want to put bling all over it, if you want to put Christmas lights. At the end of the day, it's a tent. And as I was kind of walking through this, I did some research on tents, and there are some actually very interesting ones out there. If you want, there's one out there you can buy. It looks just like a watermelon. I don't know why you want that, but maybe for you, you love watermelon. Well, you can get you a tent that looks just like a watermelon, all right? They've also got ones that, I'm not kidding you, from the outside, it is the picture of a pasture with a sheep on it. And in the picture, that temporary dwelling is sitting in a pasture that is full of sheep. And so if someone's coming after you and the only place you have to hide is a pasture full of sheep, there is a temporary dwelling that you can use. But truth is, it doesn't matter how fancy you make it, at the end of the day, it is a temporary dwelling. That's all it's there for. It's not there to be a building. He says that we know that if the tent, that is our earthly home, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. And so again, I just want to challenge us as we're laying the foundation today of where we're going these next couple of weeks, that in your life, in your business, in your family, in all those things, are you doing your very best to have as fancy of a tent as you can? At the end of the day, you're missing the point that there is a building that is awaiting you. He goes on to give this challenge, again, running these different contrasts, and they're important for us to see. You know, when I was in college, I actually led a group of students to Colorado for kind of our summer camp. We have a university here for our high school students, and it was kind of like that for our church, and we took a group, and we stayed right outside the Royal Gorge area. If you've been there, you know it's absolutely beautiful. It's stunning. And we did some whitewater rafting and some horseback riding and all those things, but really, the coolest experience was we stayed in tents on the side of a mountain there in Colorado. And it was amazing. It was fun just to see all these different, you know, students in their tents and chaperones and all that. But then we would come together and we would study the Word of God together. And as we studied the Word together, I mean, you could look out and you could just see the beauty. You could see God at work and just in creation. It was amazing. Well, one night, as we had been there a couple days, one night, as it got into the evening, it was time to go back for bed. So we all go to our tents. There were several to a tent. And as we're there, we're seeing our tent. All of a sudden, the thunder. We start hearing some thunder. Well, you know what happens next, right? Well, here comes the rain. And these storms begin to blow in off the mountains where we're at, which is not uncommon in Colorado. Well, we're in there. And next thing we know, this thing hits. Like, it hits. And so being, you know, macho men, what do? We stay in the tent, right? And our tent, I mean, it's like blowing sideways, right? I mean, just rain pouring down, you know, thinking there have to be, you know, like animals flying outside like crazy, all right? All right, I got to be honest, that didn't happen. We went and got in vehicles, all right? We did not stay in our tent. You know what people that do that stay in tents, they're not macho, they're dumb. That's what they are. And so this storm comes, and we see, and since the storm is coming, realizing, you know what, this thing might get bad. And so we go and we sit in a car. If there would have been a building, we would have gone and sat in a building. Why? Because we trust the building. But the truth is in our life, so many of us, we're trusting that tent. We're trusting that tent that when the storms come, when things get tough, that it'll hold us the whole time. We forget that there is a building of God that is being prepared for us. Jesus said, he told us that I'm going to prepare a place for you. Don't forget that. Let's live our lives this week remembering that an upgrade is coming, and live our lives for the kingdom of God so that others may see it. He goes on in verse 8 there, and he says, yes, we are of good courage. We would rather be away from the body and at home with the Lord. So whether we are at home or away, we make it our aim to please him. We're making the trade-off here. We're saying we're not going to gorge ourselves on the chips and salsa. We're going to live for the main course. And everything we experience, the aim of our life is going to be to please him. I want to leave you with this quote. It's a quote that for me has caused me to wrestle a little bit, and I hope for you it'll cause you to wrestle a little bit. It's my desire for us as a church that we would be a church that is on mission, knowing that God has saved us to send us. And that I believe that if we are living our lives in light of eternity, if we are living knowing that the main course is coming, we can be more effective, we can have more urgency in our day-to-day life than without that mindset. And so that's my desire, is that we would live on mission, that we would know that that's who God's calling us to be. My desire even more than that is for those of you that are here, that all you know in life is this tent. That all you know in life is what is seen. It's my prayer today as we've come and we've looked at the word together and we've laughed a little bit, but really, above all that, it's my desire that this morning you would come to that place of saying, has that vacuum in my heart, has it been filled by God? One of the things that we're going to do this morning as we close is that we're going to have our pastors, they're going to be down here on the floor, and we're going to have some in the balcony so that when you dismiss, it'll be easy to see exactly where they're at. And as we dismiss, if you need to know Christ, if you need to have that vacuum be filled in your heart, or if you just see some things in your life that aren't lining up with what you really desire, what you know God desires for your life, we just want to be available to you. So as we dismiss, before you run to get your kids, before you run to beat everyone to chips and salsa, that you would just come down and just grab a pastor and say, I need to know Jesus, or will you pray for me in this situation? What's going on? But I want you to hear this quote from C.S. Lewis from his book, The Weight of Glory. He says, at present, we are on the outside of the world. The wrong side of the door. We discern the freshness and purity of morning, but they do not make us fresh and pure. We cannot mingle with the splendors we see. Now listen to this. But all the leaves of the New Testament are rustling with the rumor that it will not always be so. Someday, God willing, we shall get in. That's good stuff. That's good stuff. I love it there, that the leaves of the New Testament are wrestling. There's something in the Word of God when we read it. There's something in our spirit that churns, that just says, there's more to life than this. There's something inside of us that when we face those afflictions, there's something inside of us that when we trust God, that we can say these are light and these are momentary compared to what's being prepared for us that is beyond all comparison.
Thanks so much for being with us today. My name is Michael Wood. I'm the lead pastor at First West. We're a church in two locations, in West Monroe, Louisiana, and in Sterlington, Louisiana. It's the heartbeat of our church to see people changed by the gospel and living out their Christ-centered purpose. If there's any way that we can pray for you or serve you, would you please contact us? You can get more information about our church at firstwest.cc. Thank you.